This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I'm Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen. And Adam, I think we've had this game circled on the schedule probably when the schedule came out. It's our guy Lamar Jackson against the New England Patriots, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Patriots, too, have quite the history as well. It's kind of like the preseason's over now for New England, and that the next games is the real meat of this schedule, and it starts here with Lamar and Baltimore. I know I'm pretty jacked up to see them actually tested and pushed by a team that, you know, goes beyond maybe what the Bills did on offense against them as well.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, this is the best team the Patriots will play to date, I think, in terms of where they are, you know, how their confidence is coming. I mean, it's on the road. You know, it's a team playing with some swagger now and believing in itself. So I think this is kind of what the Patriots need, is a test against a good team. They haven't always gotten tested. It's, you know, they've beaten, you know, they've been smoking teams, which is good.
Right.
But you always do want to know what the team's made of when it gets a little tougher. So I think, I think this is going to be just a fun, exciting game.
Yeah, this isn't this Patriots have played an easy schedule rant. You know, we're not saying that it's anything like that. But I do think that, you know, this game in Baltimore and the way that they're coached and how they play in all three phases of the game, this is a playoff team with potential Super Bowl aspirations that the Patriots might see again in January, which you just can't say that about the Cleveland Browns. You can't say that about the Jets or the Dolphins or, you know, any of those other teams. Maybe you can say that about the Bills in terms of the playoffs. I don't think the Bills are ready to be Super Bowl contenders, but this team in Baltimore, the one thing that always stands out about them is that they take a very Patriot-like approach to all three phases of the game. They're good on offense, they're good on defense, and they're good in the kicking game. You know, this isn't a team that has any sort of glaring weakness. There's certainly weaknesses, and we'll talk about the strengths and weaknesses of all their players in both sides and all three sides of the ball. But really the thing is that this is a well-coached football team. You watch them. They understand the scheme. They understand what they're trying to do on every single play. The offense, really, Greg Roman, hats off to that guy. He has done an excellent job with Lamar Jackson and just crafting this entire offense around a really unique talent that clearly has plenty of talent to play quarterback in the NFL. But it was going to take a special kind of offensive coordinator and a special mind to be able to craft it all together, because it's not like you can just have him be Tom Brady and stand back in the shotgun and read through the defense and make a throw, right? You know, you need to use his speed and his feet as an element and kind of as another weapon. So you're playing 11 on 11. So Greg Roman's basically taken the Colin Kaepernick 49ers offense that they had there, where he was also the offensive coordinator back in San Francisco, and he's brought it to Baltimore and made some new kind of updates and got, you know, updated to the times and kind of crafted it a little bit more around Lamar compared to Kaepernick. But what let's start with Lamar, because that's obviously the biggest, you know, kind of storyline here. And I think it's been a really cool week, because there's been a lot of discussion on Twitter, a lot of discussion on any type of NFL coverage about what's Bill Belichick going to do to defend Lamar Jackson. But before we get to that, I do want to get your thoughts on just Lamar's season so far, because a lot of people right now have him on the short list for MVP.
Yeah, I think with Lamar, he's just grown in this offense, and I think he's grown in terms of confidence in his playing ability. This offense fits him well, and you know, we've talked a while about, you know, offenses at the pro level, getting more creative to fit, you know, to fit the skills of the quarterback. Sorry, yeah. I couldn't spit that one out. But and I think, you know, his running ability can't be ignored, and they've also created some elements where he'll be in space, in, you know, and can either you know, run it or throw it and just put pressure on the defense like that. There's a lot of rollouts. There's a lot of play action. You know, there's a lot of power. There's like all different sorts of ways that they use his best traits, and they do it. And they do it well, and they have it with a guy who can really, I mean, he's much faster than Kaepernick for sure. And, you know, I think he's just growing into his role. I mean, he had a great game against Seattle last week.
Yeah, I think the ability to kind of take his strengths and mask his weaknesses, that's a lot of the things that Roman has done. And we can talk about some of the running and his running element and the quarterback design runs that he brings to the table in a minute when we talk about the running game. But just as a passer, what I think I've seen from him more, his accuracy deep, I think, is really pretty good. His accuracy between the numbers for the most part, and his ability to anticipate throws and read underneath defenders and do that kind of stuff is pretty good. And that goes back to Louisville, really, with the stuff between the numbers. I think he's always been a pretty good timing thrower when you get to throw on linebackers and safeties and stuff like that. Where we were talking about this, you know, where he struggles a little bit is when you ask him to throw it outside the numbers. And the other area where I see him struggle a little bit is just within 20 yards with pinpoint accuracy, right? He's putting the ball in places where his guys can catch it, but it's not always in yak places, right? It's not always on the frame. Sometimes he's asking guys to go outside their frame or go low or dive for a catch. He had one of his first throws against Seattle, just a little 8-yard comeback curl route to his outside receiver, and the ball, it was right there, right? And he saw it and he threw it, and he just threw it behind the guy, and his receiver still caught it, but he had to go down to his left and catch it like going to the ground. So it eliminated any type of after the catch opportunity or anything like that from the throw. So he's making the right reads. He's seeing the field well. I just think that accuracy might not ever be there to the fullest potential, but I don't know if it's that big of a problem because of how electric he is with his legs and how electric he is with the deep balls, and then also throwing the ball on the move as well. So I don't know how much of a factor the fact that he can't hit, you know, every single 10-yard out accurately on a dime every single time, like he's Tom Brady or Drew Brees or somebody like that. I'm not sure how much that all really matters.
No, I think that's the thing that makes him so dangerous is his, you know, ability to make something out of nothing and make something big out of nothing. The long pass he had at the beginning of the Seattle game, you didn't know if he was going to run or throw there. You're sort
great
of caught
design, too.
Yeah, you're sort of caught in no man's land everywhere on the field. So I think, you know, one of the things I think you have to do is keep him from open space in any way you can. There's been a lot of talk about the zero blitz stuff. I can't get really into that too much. But in terms of limiting his space and somehow keeping him, you know, in a spot where he has to, he can't use his legs, creating pressure as much as possible. That's probably the best thing I could come up with. But honestly, I don't think there's any Lamar breaker yet. I think it's a work in progress. But yeah. If there's a defense that could come up with it, it's definitely the Pats.
Yeah, so there's no Lamar breaker, but I will, you know, I'm coming up with a strategy for my game plan and obviously for the podcast as well. And I think there is one kind of big discrepancy in terms of what kind of coverage you use against him. And it's not, the numbers are still very good for Lamar against zone coverage, but he's definitely a better passer and a better runner against man coverage. I think this is a bigger kind of thing that we can talk about here in terms of man versus zone. I think the biggest thing that I look at, listen, against zone coverage, his completion percentage is about the same, but he does, all five of his interceptions are against zone coverage, and his passer yards per attempt drops from 8.9 against man to 7.5 against zone. So I think the strategy in terms of stopping him as a passer would be to play zone coverage in order to force him to fit tight window throws, right? You just want to get him to constantly have to throw the ball into a tight window. And yeah, you can obviously do that against man coverage too, but here's the kicker against man coverage. Ready for this number? Against man coverage, scrambles against man coverage, so not designed runs, just backyard stuff. He is averaging 17 yards a carry against man coverage. And you have man coverage out there, and the design is obviously going to be man coverage with a spy on Lamar, right? One spy is not good enough against this guy. This is not Josh Allen. This is not Baker Mayfield, right? This is a different animal. So when you put one spy, this Seahawks actually did this. They put Bobby Wagner as the spy on Lamar on a lot of plays, and they played man coverage behind it. And Bobby Wagner is one of the best linebackers in the NFL, and Wagner looked slow. He looked slow against Lamar. Yeah, he couldn't keep up with it.
Everybody does.
Yeah, and he couldn't run with it. So I think the biggest problem with playing man coverage is not necessarily, like, obviously the passing numbers are better against man than zone also, like I just read off. I think the bigger problem is that when you play man, everybody's back is to the quarterback, and usually you only have one guy that's spying him, one guy that's really looking at him, and when you do that, he just torches you. I mean, 17.3 yards per carry is just insane. And you go back and watch that Seattle game. I just pulled up a play for my game plan this week where Seattle brings a man blitz. They bring a slot blitz and they play man coverage behind it, and they have Bobby Wagner as the spy, and Lamar ran it for 33 yards on a scramble because Bobby Wagner just in space against Lamar, just there's no chance. And yeah, I think there's a chance that the Patriots could go man coverage and put a spy on him and have the spy be somebody like Jonathan Jones or Patrick Chung or one of their defensive backs, maybe Devin McCourty, one of their faster guys on defense. And maybe you can go with that strategy sometimes. But I think the biggest issue is even a guy as good of an open field tackler as Jones or Devin or Jason or whoever it might be, as good as those guys are and as fast as those guys are in the open field, Lamar probably is faster, and he also knows where he's going. Right. So they're reacting to where he's going, whereas he knows where he's going. And I just think that playing zone has to be the strategy on most downs because the numbers against man coverage, he's just shredding man coverage all year long.
Yeah. And I think that concept that you described is exactly right. I think with man coverage and your back is to Lamar Jackson, and you don't know he's coming, and all of a sudden he's in the open field. He's hard enough to tackle when you got perfect. You know, you got a perfect angle on the guy. So I like that. Yeah, I think that works.
Now,
I mean, in theory.
That's all this is in theory. So the interesting thing is that the Patriots obviously play more man coverage than any team in the league. They're playing man coverage on 63% of their snaps right now. They're a man coverage team, right? They're an aggressive defense. They want to attack with, you know, the zero blitzes and all that kind of stuff. And they want to play man coverage with Gilmore and those guys in the secondary. So this does go a little bit against what they've done all year, but we've always heard that Bill Belichick is a game plan coach, right? And if the best game plan is to not play man coverage, then that's what they're going to have to do. Now, in years past, I think especially Gilmore's first season in New England, people hear a zone coverage with the Patriots, and they're like, we don't want that. You know, that's not going to work because we know that the Patriots are a little bit worse against zone than man. That's actually not necessarily true this year. They're definitely more dominant in man coverage. But PFF actually just did a ranking where they ranked the best defenses in terms of coverage, man, zone. Patriots were number one on both lists. They were number one man coverage team in the NFL, and they were number one zone coverage team in the NFL. So I think that this group this year, because of their continuity, because of their experience, they're playing just as well in zone coverage as they are playing in man coverage in a lot of ways. So I don't think it's that big of a discrepancy in terms of, you know, this is really going against what they want to do and what their comfort zone is and all those kinds of things. I don't think it's like that. The other thing is that there's a lot of zone coverages, especially in the Patriots defense, where they're matching everything on the outsides anyway. So the guys on the boundaries, the corners on the boundaries, when they have vertical routes to attack their zones, those guys are basically playing it like it's man, right? And it's really only zone in the middle of the defense. So it's the zone in the underneath linebackers, the safety in the middle of the field, that kind of stuff. And that way there, everybody's eyes can in the middle of the field can be on Lamar. And if he goes one way or the other, then they're right on it. And I think that this is another game, too, where I don't know how often the Patriots are going to play a ton of linebacker heavy personnel in this game, because besides Jamie Collins, maybe Kyle Van Noy, this is not a big Juwan Bentley game. It's not a, you know, it's not a big Landon Roberts game. As heavy as their running game is, and we'll get to that in a second, it's just, I think that the strategy is to put more speed on the field this week and be aggressive and force Lamar into a containment situation where you have multiple guys closing on him at once and you force him to be a thrower from the pocket. And that's the way, it's much easier said than done, right? And it's obviously good in theory, but I think that that's really where the Patriots have to start.
Yeah, I think, like you said, I mean, a lot of their throwing game is based on getting him on the move or getting him to throw into the middle of the field. Like we talked about, like, and, you know, him throwing to the corners on the edges, it was never a strength of his in college. He was always more successful over the middle, which is why, you know, his tight ends are always so successful, it seems like, here at Baltimore too. So, you know, you have to find a way to be fast but also heavy with their run game. That's what makes it difficult, because they do have a good power run game. It's, you know, it's not just Lamar. So I think, you know, it's just, and this is the thing we talk about a lot, but it's such a different offense than you see in the NFL, you know? So it's not going to be like, it's going to be one of those weeks where the scout team has to do like a really good job. Like, I wonder who's playing Lamar.
I'm trying to figure that one out. It's not Mohamed Sanu. I know that. It's not Mohamed Sanu. I thought that maybe that would be a strategy, but I think Mohamed Sanu is worried about Mohamed Sanu right now in terms of catching up with the playbook and everything here in New England. If Sanu had been here for a couple of years, then maybe they would have gone that route, but he's got a lot of – it's a crash course right now for him, so he's got a lot to worry about on his own plate. So they did bring back Cody Kessler, who was the Josh Allen in the scout team when they played the Bills, but this is a different animal than Josh Allen. You know, this is a totally different guy. I do wonder if they're – having one quarterback mimic Lamar, like a guy like Cody Kessler or Stidham mimic Lamar on when they're practicing against passes, and they have one of the receivers or someone like that almost in like a wildcat type scenario where they have that guy in to practice the options and the RPOs and that zone read type stuff, so you get more speed at that position to simulate the speed. But let's talk about the running game, because this is such a big part of it too. You know, we can talk all day about zone coverage versus man coverage and stopping him as a passer, but stopping him as a runner and stopping this running game in general, with Ingram as well and Gus Edwards, who's a tank too, both those running backs are just tough guys to bring down. It's, I think, a big part of this game obviously too. And Lamar this season keeps the ball on those little zone read plays three times more than any other quarterback in the league. So a lot of those zone reads are just actually end up just being like QB draw type plays, and they love to just pull guys. They're pulling linemen, they're pulling tight ends, they're pulling everybody across the formation, and they love to just like create surfaces, right, where you got a three-man kind of wall coming at you on one side, and you got Marshall Yanda and a tight end coming right at you, and you're in trouble. It's a physical brand of football. So that's the balance. Bill Belichick talked about it this week, yesterday at his press conference, about balancing. Do you go heavy to deal with the power running game, or do you go light to chase Lamar Jackson around? You know, it's definitely a balance. I think it's a difficult one to kind of strike too, but this running game is diverse. They run a lot of triple option. They got full house backfield where they got two running backs flanking Lamar, and he could hand it to either one of them or run it himself. There's a lot of things going on with this running game.
Yeah, it's and it makes it all the, you know, you wonder, it's almost like playing the option sometimes. Because
it's like going back to like Navy or you know, one of the college teams.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's like, you know, the whole cliche of assignment football and you know, all that stuff. But it's the thing that I feel like is interesting is they can use Lamar in any way they want, you know, with, you know, the I mean, the fourth down touchdown run they had, I don't think many NFL teams can do that with a quarterback.
No, that was a straight draw too. That was there wasn't a ton of window dressing. There was we're going to just straight draw it, and our guy is just better than your guy.
It was well blocked, and he finished the run well.
Yeah.
Everybody, the thing about him that everybody was critiquing was his passing ability and stuff like that, which is fine. But this is a team that is, you know, found a way to utilize the best of his ability. So, I think, like I was saying before, I don't know what a good strategy is here to defend a guy like him. I think it really just comes down to whatever they decide to, take away the most. You know, like, is Lamar's running the thing that scares you the most? Are you going to let the running backs have theirs? Are you going to, take away this part of the field as opposed to the next? I kind of feel like it's going to be a wait and see thing, because this is the first time they've really played against it.
Yeah, I think what's cool about Lamar as a runner too is, a lot of quarterbacks that are running quarterbacks, you talk about the scramble drill, right? You talk about them creating, they're dropping back to pass, the pass isn't there, and they take off. Lamar is all like a running back. Like he runs like a running back too. He doesn't run like a quarterback, right? Like, he knows how to protect himself. He also kind of knows how to get skinny through tight holes and follow his blockers and set up blocks. And, he runs the ball like he's a running back, which makes him even more dangerous on all those quarterback keepers. Now, I think that the way you really have to stop him is actually something that your guy at LSU, Aranda, does. And that's called the tight run. So the tight front, basically what happens is that if you play, most teams play spread in a 4-2-5 type nickel, right? And the issue with the 4-2-5 is that there's always an open gap on the line of scrimmage. Somewhere within between the tackles, usually the B gap is open, because there's just not, you can't cover all the gaps in that type of defense. Now, in the tight front, what it's a 3-2 basically, right? And with the three guys on the line of scrimmage, they're in tight, inside, over the guards in the center, and maybe a little bit shaded over the tackles for the ends. And then you have two linebackers stacked behind them. So there's five guys, at all times in the box, right? And in tight to the box. So what that allows the defense to do is it allows you to cover all the gaps. So the gaps that end up being open are the edges, are the C gaps on the outside. And what you have is two defenders that are forced defenders on the outside that are forcing those runs back into the compact area of the defense. So that tight formation, the Chargers actually used it a little bit against Lamar and the Ravens last year in that wild card game. And they were able to use a pretty good player by the guy named Derwin James, I'm sure everyone's heard about, as the strong side kind of edge setter force defender. Now, I don't know if Patriots don't have a Derwin James, but they do have a Jamie Collins, right? And I think that that Jamie Collins could probably play. And in order to really kind of combat this running game, that's going to allow them to put a lot of guys over every single gap in the run game. And when they bring those pullers and stuff like that, you do have three guys on the line of scrimmage that can shoot those gaps and get in. Because when you bring a puller, the best way to beat a puller is to beat the puller to the spot, right? Exactly. You want to get there instantly. You want to shoot the gap. You want to get inside. So if you can do that against this Lamar rushing attack, then you can have some success. Now, the Chargers, obviously, everybody remembers back in the playoffs, were playing basically a quarters or dime packages most of the time. They had six or seven defensive backs on the field, and they just had good defensive backs that were bigger, jacked up safeties like a Derwin James that could really play those types of roles. The Patriots, I think, do have a couple of those guys. Now, I mentioned Jamie Collins is kind of the strong side player. I think that that's a good chance that he could do that, because what happens is that player in the tight front, if Lamar actually ends up passing the ball when you're in kind of a run formation as a defense, Lamar actually ends up passing the ball, that player becomes a key critical player in keeping Lamar contained, because he's on the arm side of the quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to be able to keep that the quarterback inside the pocket. You got to be able to set the edge against the quarterback runs. So that needs to be an athletic player, is what I'm saying. It can't be a heavier linebacker.
Yeah,
that's
well,
got to be like Collins type guy.
Yeah, well, in that LSU game, they used Jamal Adams.
Yes.
So exactly to your point last week about him being sort of like a linebacker who can also cover. And, like, I think at one point he chased him, kind of chased him down from behind, you know. So maybe a McCourty or something like that, you know. I don't know.
Yeah. So the other thing – go ahead.
But Collins is a really good pick for that because he is your, you know, your sort of your biggest, fastest weapon there. I mean, he's somebody that, you know, can hold up to power. He is somebody that is fast and instinctual, a good open field tackler. You know, I think, yeah, I like that.
Because it's not, you're not asking him to be a spy, right? Like, you're not asking him to spy Lamar all on his own. You're just asking him to keep outside contain, right? And just keep and funnel Lamar back inside when he tries to scramble so he can't get that edge again, you know. And that's really, it's going to have to be the only, I'm not calling out Jamie Collins here, but it's an assignment-based role in the game plan, right? So he's got to play the assignment. And that was one thing that Derwin did really well in that game in the wild card, is that he didn't take any cheese and he didn't get too aggressive. And he just stayed exactly where they wanted him to stay the whole game, just right on Lamar's outside leverage. Right. And just so that just far enough away from him that he couldn't turn the corner against him. Now in the box, I do wonder if we see a little bit more, or, you know, we see this all the time, but just see it regularly in this game. A little bit of Patrick Chung down there, a little bit of Devin McCourty, maybe some Terrence Brooks. Put some speed on that field, because those guys that are going to be playing those underneath zones, this is more of like in the passing situation, not necessarily on first down, right? But if you get Lamar into a 3rd and 8 or a 3rd and 9, for instance, you start putting those DBs on the field, those underneath zones. Now when he takes off, you got a guy like a Chung, like a McCourty, like a John Jones, who can really fly. Those are the guys that are closing on him now instead of a linebacker. So yeah. That's what the Chargers did. Now, the Chargers played quarters and dime even on first and second down, but that was more just because that was the personnel that they had. I think the Patriots still on first down will probably go a little bit heavier to combat this running game. But on second and long, third pass, obvious passing situations on third down, I think you could see some quarters, which is not quarters coverage, 7 DBs quarters is what I mean.
Yes, and I think the right idea when you have, you know, that zone is you're putting as many guys as you can into a position where you can see them, like you said, you know, like it's almost like how teams defend Edelman.
Yeah.
Kinda, you know, it's like how do you bracket a quarterback?
Yeah.
You know, or like how Got do you it. Take like, you know, so it's interesting. I think, you know, give him as little space as possible, you know when you try to find the tendencies when they do those boot action rollouts,
try to
maybe send guys from the weak side. From watching their offense, it's just not something that you're used to seeing with a quarterback that's this fast.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a different thing.
Yeah. And we're not, you know, the thing is that Mark Andrews is a nice tight end, and Hollywood Brown, if he plays in this game, which it sounds like he probably will, is good. And Miles Boykin's starting to come along as kind of their big body receiver on the outside. But if you can stop the dual threat that is Lamar, and I let's not say stop, if you can slow down the dual threat that is Lamar, I still think you're going to slow down this offense. Like, none of their playmakers really around him, other than we're just talking about the passing game strictly, I don't think I'm all that terrified of any of those guys. You know, this is not a situation in my eyes like when you play Kansas City, for instance, and you're playing Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, right? Those two guys scare me. You know, those two guys are guys that you really need to worry about putting coverage in the back end to be able to handle those guys. When the Patriots played the Browns this last week, even they were, I wouldn't call it worry, but they knew that they had to play Odell and Jarvis Landry, right? And they gave up a little bit in the run, but they were willing to give up the run because they weren't giving up big passing plays over the top to those guys. So in this game, I really think it's all about Lamar, you know, and it's about stopping Lamar. And I really don't know if their skill players are even going to have much impact on this game if you can do that. So I would focus the whole game plan. All 11 guys on the field almost need to be focused on Lamar. You know, and yep, that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but I mean, we're talking about maybe 7-8 guys a play focused on one guy, you know, yep. And that's really the route that I think that they need to go. Before we move over to the defense side of the ball, because the Ravens do have a defense, you know, I don't think that
it's more fun to talk about their offense, though. It is true.
Feel like this week, and we're going to talk about the defense, because I feel like this week all of our coverage about this game is about Lamar, and I'm not blaming anybody. It's just such an interesting and fascinating chess match when you have the greatest defensive mastermind of all time against one of the more unique talents in NFL history. It's like when they play the Chiefs, they're obviously going to talk a ton about Mahomes. You know, it's just the way things go. But before we get to the defensive side of the ball, football season is in full swing. Get into the game with our exclusive sports betting partners, betonline.ag. Sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus or your first deposit to start betting college or professional ball. Every spread, every total, every winner or loser, straight bet, parlay, or tease your way through the season. You can even bet on wild proposition bets such as, will the Dolphins win a game? Every week, it's still golden. Get to the fastest to market odds, updates, and payouts with our new sportsbook partners, betonline.ag. Head on over to our website today or use your mobile device to join and use promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts, and those poor Miami Dolphins and Brian Flores. That bet's still strong and still staying, still holding after that Monday night performance. I thought they were going to maybe get the Steelers on Monday night. It didn't happen.
That's the fun part, you know, that I love the site, to be honest. I think it's great.
So back to the Baltimore, to their defense. I think the interesting thing about this defense, I was texting you about this earlier in the week, is that we've kind of role reversed in Baltimore a little bit, where it used to be all about Ray Lewis and Ed Reed and that really great defense, obviously the 2000 Ravens and all that kind of stuff. And then the team that won the Super Bowl wasn't quite as dominant, obviously, as the 2000 team, but their defense was really good. Now the offense is carrying them a little bit more, and it's kind of flipped to more of an offensive football team. They're right smack dab in the middle in DVOA defensively. They're 18th right now in the league. So they're an average defense by most metrics. They're not bad, but they're about average. But at the same time, they do have some players that with name recognition, right? Especially in the secondary.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Thomas. I think this win over Seattle, you know, being able to force plays, turnovers, big plays. Peters obviously is a guy that, you know, baits guys into interceptions well, takes chances, which is something you can exploit, of course. You know, you can get underneath stuff sometimes on him. But I don't know. It's not like a typical Ravens defense, but at the same time, it's going to be one that if Baltimore wins the time of possession battle as much as it's been able to do, you know, the defense is going to be in a better position, especially if there's a lead, so they can be more aggressive. I don't know. I think, you know, it's still a pretty good defense. I wouldn't say it's as good as like the Bills or anything like that, but it gets helped along by how the offense plays for sure.
Yeah, I also really like how they're coached. They're one of those teams that's kind of in this sim pressure movement, right? Like they're putting a lot of creepers around the line of scrimmage. They're blitzing and then they're bluffing and they're doing all that. A lot of the stuff that the Patriots do it's not quite the same with Baltimore, but it's similar. You know, they do a lot of that kind of stuff, and they're going to sort of bring a lot of things that are going to look like they're heavy pressures, but they're actually only four or five man pressures because they back guys off and they drop guys that you're not expecting. So they'll like take their ends and drop those guys and blitz the off ball linebackers, or they'll drop a guy off the line of scrimmage and they'll blitz a corner from the slot, or, you know, stuff like that, that we've seen in a lot of different kind of, you know, areas of football that we've talked about over the last, I would say, year or so, because it's been so popular, really. So I think that that's a big thing about what they do in the front seven. It's not similarly to the, it's not a, there's no one dominant player in this front seven, right? They don't have an Aaron Donald. They don't have a Khalil Mack, but they have a bunch of guys that kind of understand the scheme and understand what they're trying to do defensively to pressure quarterbacks. And they're able to really get after it that way. It's a really kind of new age look, a new age scheme, and the Patriots, Baltimore, these are some of the teams that are kind of stealing a lot from the college ranks in terms of those pressures and different types of blitz looks that they're giving defense offenses. In the secondary, you mentioned Peters. I think that the turnovers, what you mentioned, was really the key part of this. I don't think that, I've never been a huge Marcus Peters fan, because I feel like he's always been one of those guys that's more of a ball hawk than a positionally sound corner. You know, he's not really a man coverage corner. He's more of a zone guy that kind of likes to sit and cover two or maybe some quarters and just kind of pick off passes, right? And he did it to Russell Wilson, so you can't sleep on it. You know, he jumped a route right in the flat on Russell Wilson and took it to the house in that game a few weeks ago. Earl Thomas, similar player in terms of different positions, but also one of those guys that you always kind of have to know where he's at, because he's always patrolling the deep part of the field, and you kind of have to know where he's at because he'll pick you off too. I think he's maybe lost a little bit of a step, Earl has, but not... It's like half a step or three-fourths of a step or something like that. But at the same time, he's still one of those guys that can ball hawk and really create big plays on the back end. The guy I really like out of their secondary who hasn't had the best of years this year but is really, I think, a really good player is Marlon Humphrey, who is just he's a really physical guy. I think he's a little bit more versatile than Peters. He can play man or zone. And he's a guy that, when he's on, can really lock down people. You know, Peters, when he's on, he's getting picks, right? You know, that he's jumping routes and he's reading quarterback's eyes and he's getting interception. When Humphreys is on, he can shut down his side of the field or shut down a matchup. You know, he's a lot more of like a kind of a lockdown corner when he's on his game.
Yeah, and I think the point you made about Thomas is a really good one, because he's, you know, he's not 100%, but he's still Earl Thomas. You know what I mean? You know, and his sort of 85% is still better than, you know, a lot of guys. Right. So yeah, it's I don't know. I think the Patriots have to be able to sort of control the ball a little bit as well, and just sort of, you know, run the ball a little bit. Like they got some rhythm that way last week. The holes were there a little bit more. You know, maybe they have some new wrinkles that Baltimore hasn't seen yet. They're gonna have to. I mean, you don't. It's never like you wanna. Well, I think one of the things that is you want to do to Baltimore in general is get them to play from behind. Because, you know, Lamar, you know, sometimes has these really awful first halves and he makes this great comeback. Last week, they were able to, like, make this big win on the road. But, you know, you saw the Chargers game last year in the playoffs. You know, they got down by a lot and he made that comeback, but it wasn't, you know, they weren't able to make it all the way back. And then, you know, he did the same thing against the Chiefs. So, you know, I think you don't want to necessarily, you know, just score quick, but you do want to play with a lead this game, and just, you know, not make, you know, make sure that this ball possession game plan that the Ravens have is advantageous to them.
Yeah, great way to stop a good running team is to play with a lead. Because yeah. then you really kind of limit the fact that they can, you know, how much are they really going to run it if they're down 10 points? Exactly. You know, that's kind of the thought process there. All right, before we head out here, I did want to just touch briefly on N'Keal Harry. And I think that there is a little bit of kind of fear that he hasn't been activated yet. There's really no reason to activate him if you're the Patriots until Saturday night. You know, they can activate him. I think the deadline's 6 o'clock on Saturday. As long as they activate him before that deadline, he's eligible to play in the game on Sunday. And for now, they can kind of just hold the roster spot, right? They don't need to, because he is on IR to return and he can practice fully. So they don't really need to rush him back in terms of activating him to the active roster. Now, if they don't activate him on Saturday night, then we can start talking about it, because they have to activate him by Tuesday or he reverts back to IR and they lose him for the year. So I expect to have him activated on Saturday. I'm not sure how much he's actually going to play in the game on Sunday, but this is exciting. It's a first round pick. It's a guy with a lot of talent that we've certainly talked about a lot on this podcast, and I'm excited to see him out there. I think that he will be out there in some capacity, at least if it's not this Sunday, then we'll have to wait till after the bye, but I don't think that they're going to let him revert back to IR.
Right, and it would be really good to see him, because I think when, I mean, you're looking at a guy who gets on the field for the first time, they like to go to him and see, yeah. like, get his experience in there. And it's going to be exciting to see sort of what they think he's good at, where they, you know, want to use him. And it's a great thing to have is a first-round talent come out of nowhere that the other team doesn't know how the other team uses them. You know, so I think it's going to be exciting. I would hope that, you know, he is sort of on those sort of back shoulder throws, like you said.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's where he's very good. Contested catches, all that. Get to see him in the red zone if all this comes to pass. All the stuff that, you know, we saw leading up to the draft.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it would just be it'd be a good thing to see him on the field, be a good thing for, you know, him to be sort of a new thing for the Ravens staff to game plan for and face. I'm curious to see what happens there.
Yeah. So all indications are right now, based off training camp, based off of things that I've heard, is that he is learning mostly the X receiver spot, which is what Josh Gordon obviously played, which, so it makes a lot of sense why, you know, that whole kind of transaction went down. But beyond learning just the X, I'm really curious to see if they do move him around the formation and play him a little bit inside, maybe even play him in like kind of like more of an H-back type role and really get creative with it and start moving him around a whole lot. Because we did see the two things that you saw in college were obvious, were the contested catch ability and the after the catch ability. So if you can get this guy into space or get him into opportunities where he can create after the catch, I mean, we saw it at Arizona State. You know, he's not going to reverse field in the NFL, I don't think. But he's got that ability to really create with the ball in his hands for a guy that's a big guy. You know, he's a much bigger guy than you would think for a guy that has that kind of skill set, but he does. So I'm very curious to see. There's a lot of different kind of ways that they could go about doing this. You know, this is not a player that is just strictly a one type of one trick pony, right? And so I'm very curious to see what it is that they actually have in mind for him, because they've been ramping it up to this point. In camp, he was really just playing X and they were kind of just getting him comfortable in that role so that he had a role, right? And I really think that these last 8 weeks or so that he's been on IR, these couple of weeks that he's practiced kind of behind closed doors, I think that I hope at least that Josh McDaniels has been kind of just thinking up ways and scheming up ways to use his skill set, because he is a really unique player. He's not somebody, he has a lot of work to do with his route running, right? We knew that coming in. The route details, the breaks at the top of the route especially, but even his release package against press coverage was kind of shaky at Arizona State. So he's not a refined route runner quite yet, but he is a freak athlete in terms of size, speed, you know, kind of combination. Big, big guy, really well-built, physical receiver, and that can run. You know, he ran in the low 4.5s at 6'3", 230 pounds, which is fast. It's fast for his size. So I really think that he's a unique player. And I don't think that it's simply going to be, maybe it will be in the beginning, but as he kind of gets integrated here and as they kind of pick up his career, I really don't think that he's just going to be a guy that's just going to run the X route tree and just stand on the outside and run routes against a corner. You know, I don't see that being the only way that they use him. I think that they can really kind of find ways to get creative with him.
Yeah. And and that's the great thing about having a guy that, you know, the other team doesn't have any film on really with this team, I think it'll be interesting. You know, the guy is definitely a very versatile. He's a very big guy. He can do a lot of different things. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I don't know what they'll try with him, but I do like the stuff that he can bring as far as just using his size and his physicality. I like, and he's good after the catch, you know, and like, especially in college, you saw those cross the field runs where he was, you know, sort of, you know, he didn't look like he was running fast, but he was speeding by everybody.
Yeah. You know? He plays a lot faster too than it looks in that he times. Yeah. A lot of his coaches down there and stuff like that, after they drafted him, when I was talking to them, they're like, listen, he might only run a 4.3 or 4.53 or 4.52 or whatever it was, but on game day, he has another gear.
Yeah. He totally agree with that. And I want to see, I just want to see what he looks like out there, you know. Yeah. how healthy he is. And, you know, I just want to see them incorporate him just because, you know, if he's going to be a weapon the rest of the season, they got to find out as soon as possible what he's good at. Yeah. And, you know, that's what better way than to throw him into the fire against a team like the Ravens on the road.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like a preseason game. You're going to find out right away what he can and can't do out there.
Yeah. So the Patriots have this thing called a virtual room. They call it, it's not virtual reality. It's a small indoor room with a turf field on it. Phil Perry actually wrote a great article about it after, was it the Giants game when Gunner and Jacoby Myers had to play the whole second half. And what it allows them to do is it's about 20 yards of turf, right? And so it allows Troy Brown goes up there with the young guys, with Myers, with Gunner, and with Nikhil, and they run routes. And Troy is able to still see within those 20 yards the releases and the breaks at the top, and he's still able to critique them and go through it. I think Mohamed Sanu has actually joined them a little bit in these last this last week also, because you know, they're trying to get him caught up with the playbook. So they go through these drills, and Troy has really, I think, worked wonders with Gunner and Jacoby Myers. Like, those guys have fully bought in, and Jacoby Myers and especially is a fantastic route runner and has really improved quite a bit in just a short period of time. And Gunner went from early on in training camp, Gunner couldn't run a route to save his life. And now he looks like at least a guy that could be on an NFL roster, not just as a returner, but as a receiver. Right. So I think that Troy Brown's a big part of this. And I'm really wondering what Troy Brown has done with N'Keal Harry, and we'll see it hopefully soon. And we'll kind of figure it out. But those two guys, Gunner and Jacoby, have really relished with those moments with Troy Brown and really taken advantage, full advantage of his knowledge. And I think Nikhil's the same kind of guy. So I'm really interested to see how much better his route running can get, because I think that they're headed in the right direction. And in years past, when they've had trouble developing receivers, they haven't had Troy Brown helping out this much. You know, Troy Brown's a member of the staff. He's not officially a member of the staff, but he's here every single day. So he's a member of the staff. So I really think that he's low-key paying a huge dividends for some of these younger guys. Obviously, guys like Edelman and those guys kind of have it all figured out already. Not all, but they got to figure it out, right? And I think that the young guys have really benefited a lot from having Troy Brown around. All right, that just about does it. Do you have anything you want to tease?
Well, there's going to be a lot of MIA playoffs starting this week. Dartmouth's at Harvard, which is going to be a pretty big game for them. Holy Cross is at Lehigh, in the Patriot League. These are league title implication games. We'll be doing a lot of the high school stuff as well. There's just a lot of playoffs going on, and Central and Western Mass are still getting their regular seasons going. And it's exciting stuff.
Yeah, we're in the thick of playoffs for high school football. I didn't realize that we're at that point already, but here we are, in almost November. So that's very cool. And on clnsmedia.com, go check out my game plan that I'm sure a lot of you will probably be listening to this podcast on Friday. It will be out on Friday morning for those that are listening to it on Thursday night too. It'll be out Friday morning. And that's where I'm going to go into a lot of the things that we already discussed on the pod about Lamar Jackson, but I can show you visuals and stuff like that and explain it further with film and things of that nature in the game plan. So go ahead and check that out. Then Trags and I will be headed to Baltimore to cover the game. So we'll be there Sunday night for Pat's Ravens, and really looking forward to this one. I think this is going to be a heck of a game. We could look back on this game at the end of the season in January and say that this was the regular season game of the year, at least. So yeah,
it's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, and apparently it's going to be a blackout. Not that I think the Patriots players really care about that, but it's just a cool atmosphere. They're asking all the Ravens fans to bring, to wear black to the game. So the atmosphere, it's going to be hostile. It's going to be loud. The Ravens, it's not like Washington, right? It's not like the Redskins.
No.
Right? It's where it's going to be 65% Patriots fans. There's going to be a ton. This is going to be all Ravens. This is going to be black and purple everywhere. And the Patriots are kind of going into the lion's den here, so to speak. And it's not quite Buffalo, but it's a good home field advantage. It's not Kansas City. It's not Buffalo, but it's a good one. And this game's going to certainly be a good one. And it's going to be fascinating to see what Bill Belichick does against Lamar and what this defense and the boogeyman can put together against Lamar Jackson. So we'll see that Sunday night. Be sure to stay with all of our coverage here on the podcast as well. Next week during the bye, Adam and I are going to kind of take a bird's eye view at things, talk about the zero blitzes and maybe some other trends the Patriots have gone through so far this season, and get into just kind of a first half of the season recap and kind of try to put together what exactly has been going on with this team that is 8-0 and rapidly improving. Right. So we'll be back with you next week during the bye week. We'll still be here to talk about all those things. But until next time, signing off for Adam Kirchner, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.